Welcome to the Number 10 Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Number 10 Podcast. Today we have a bit of a treat for you, a bonus episode on Samuel Pepys. But before I get started, I just wanted to say thank you to the podcast community for the support I've had over the last couple of days after I have been essentially attacked by a podcast promoter or so-called podcast promoter who dumped a number of bad reviews onto our channel and sort of took the 5-star rating down to about 2.5 stars just by bundling a load of 1-star reviews on it. I am talking to Apple at the moment, who are helping, which is great, but I really do want to say thank you to everyone who has gone and left a review. To all the support from everyone, really, and especially to the OddPod Squad, who are the network of podcasts, a bit like a family, really, who have been tremendous in supporting me in trying to get back on our feet in regards to the review side of things. It doesn't mean everything, of course. It doesn't matter reviews as much, but it does help other people find the podcast. I'm enjoying putting content out, and it is sometimes deflating when someone goes after you, really, for no good reason. So thank you again if you have helped, and if you haven't and could go and leave a review or a like on Twitter, that would be absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much, and let's get on with the episode. One of the most interesting things I found in the research and writing over these episodes is that there are some fantastic people that lived during the periods that we're covering. The problem is that some of them aren't central characters, but I still want to talk about them. So that's what these episodes are for. Today we talk about probably the greatest English diarist of all time, Samuel Pepys. To me, he's probably one of the greatest witnesses to the second half of the 17th century. Not only was he present, but actively involved, experiencing firsthand the events that occurred in London from 1650 to 1700s, some of which we've discussed in detail and others that will be a throwback to secondary school history in the UK. Samuel Pepys was born in 1633 on Fleet Street in London to a tailor and daughter of a butcher. Some of his extended family had been members of Parliament, and his first cousin, Sir Richard Pepys, would become Lord Chief Justice of Ireland during Cromwell's reign. Pepys was the 5th out of 11 children, although by the time he was 7, all his elder siblings had died. In fact, only 3 of the Pepys children made it out of infancy. They wouldn't have been a rich family, but would have had a modest life for the time. Pepys was educated at Huntingdon Grammar School in Cambridgeshire before attending St. Paul's School just by Hammersmith Bridge over the River Thames. Towards the end of this time, in 1649, he attended the execution of King Charles I. Pepys was admitted into Trinity College, Cambridge as a sizer, which was essentially a student who received financial assistance in lodging and food, usually in return for performing some sort of work. He transferred to Magdalen College again as a sizer, but shortly after found himself with scholarships from a benevolent foundation. Leaving university, he joined the retinue or entourage of his cousin Edward Montagu, who would become the first Earl of Sandwich. Montagu served Cromwell, but was instrumental in bringing back the monarchy after the Lord Protector of England died and the cracks started to show under Richard Cromwell's tenure. In 1658, he worked in the Exchequer as a teller, assisting with government accounting and finance processes under Sir George Downing from 1660, who went on to run the department that dealt with payments into the government for the next quarter of a century. Around this time, he began writing his diary, recording a daily entry for almost 10 years. I mean, it's a struggle some weeks to sit down for an evening to write the podcast. Could you imagine the discipline it takes to sit down every night and keep a diary? Starting on the 1st of January 1659/1660, he began writing his diary. You may wonder why I've put two dates. This is because before 1752, the year did not legally begin until March 25th. So for the years after this, many would put dates for the last or current year and the current upcoming year for the months of January, February and March. It's confusing, but I'm sure it made sense to them. So for example, if we were in February 2019 in the current day, they would have written February 2018/2019, as 2019 would technically start on March 25th. This is the reason why the financial accounts of a lot of companies in the UK go in April, as they used to be submitted on Lady Day. the date that celebrates the Feast of Annunciation, commemorating the visit of the Archangel Gabriel to the Virgin Mary to tell her to cancel any holidays for the next 9 months. Pepys started the diary with the following shortened entry. Blessed be God, at the end of last year I was in very good health, without any sense of pain, but upon taking of cold. I lived in Axe Yard with my wife and servant Jane, and no more in family than us three. My wife gave me hopes of her being with child, but on the last day of the year, the hope belied. The condition of the state was thus. The rump, after being disturbed by Lord Lambert, was lately returned to sit again. The officers of the army all forced to yield. Lawson lies still in the river, and Monk is with his army in Scotland. Only my Lord Lambert is not yet come into Parliament, nor is it expected that he will without being forced to it. This morning I rose, put on my suit with great skirts, having not lately worn any other clothes but them. Dined at home, in the garret, where my wife dressed the remains of a turkey, and in the doing of it she burned her hand. I stayed at home all the afternoon, looking over accounts. Then went with my wife to my father's, and in going observed the great posts which the city has set up at the Conduit in Fleet Street. Supped at my father's, wherein came Mrs. Turner and Madame Maurice, and supped with us. After that, my wife and I went with them so to our own home. Nothing massively notable, but talks about the whereabouts of the key people in the Reformation. General George Monk is waiting in Edinburgh, biding his time. Lambert hasn't attended Parliament, mainly as he's preparing to march on Parliament to try and stop the Restoration from happening. The rest sets him out as a normal English gentleman going about his normal life. And I suppose that's what's nice about it. Here is an insight, and at times a truly honest and uncomfortable insight, into Pepys's thoughts and day-to-day life. But this isn't what it was best known for. It's known for the events that he witnessed. Pepys made his way to Clerk of the Acts at the Navy Board, based at the Navy Office on Seething Lane in the City of London. The Clerk of the Acts was responsible for processing contracts and dealing with the administration side of the Naval Office, and Samuel Pepys was the first person to hold the role for an annual salary of £350. You know I love a good currency conversion, so in the modern day that would be worth £36,811 per year. We talked about the amnesty that Charles II allowed to Parliament for all those who stepped away from the Republic and had not been involved in Charles I's regicide. As I said before, most did so, but Major John Toms Harrison wasn't going to be given a pass. He'd been the 17th commissioner or judge to sign Charles I's death warrant and was a Puritan fanatic who found himself in prison four times over the reign of Oliver Cromwell and the Protectorate. Refusing to flee when Charles II came to power, he was arrested and sentenced to death. Samuel Pepys said of the day, "I went to Charing Cross to see Major General Harrison hanged, drawn and quartered, which was done there, he looking as cheerful as any man could in that condition." Pepys, through his work in the Naval Office and links to his cousin, the Earl of Sandwich, was involved in the administering of the colony of Tangier, North Africa, which had been handed over from Portugal to England when Charles II married the Spanish Infanta Catherine. Samuel Pepys mentions Tangier on 480 separate days in his diary. Pepys would oversee the abandoning of the colony in 1683 and wrote a separate journal about it, stating, "The ship weighing anchor up by break of day, to see the shore on both sides, to my great pleasure. The easterly wind still very strong. Kirk, the governor, saluted us with all the guns of the town, near which we found the envoy of the Sultan encamped. But Lord, how could anybody ever think a place fit to be kept at this charge, that overlooked so many hills, can never be secured against the enemy? Amazed to think how the king hath lain out all his money upon it. Good grapes and pomegranates from Spain. Tonight infinitely bit with mosquitoes." In 1665, Pepys played a major role in dealing with a large amount of the naval preparation for the Second Anglo-Dutch War, which led to him enacting huge swathes of administrative improvements to the navy. He found a new method of centrally supplying the fleet's food supply and found himself promoted to Surveyor General. The war would end with an English defeat, of which Pepys would state, "In all things, in wisdom, in courage, force, and success, the Dutch have the best of us, and do end the war with victory on their side." Pepys was very frank in his diary about his romantic jaunts, of which he had a few outside of his marriage, including his maid. In one diary entry, he wrote about an encounter with Deb Willett, the maid. "My wife, coming up suddenly, did find me embracing the girl, and indeed I was with my mane in her cunny." In case you're wondering, mane was a term for one's hand in the 17th century. If you're wondering what a cunny is, all I'll say is you'll know one when you see it. Another, he wrote, "Into St. Dunstan's Church, where I stood by a pretty, modest maid, whom I did labour to take by the hand and the body. But she would not, but got further and further away from me, and at last I could perceive her to take pins out of her pocket to prick me if I touched her again." He often mentioned and fancied the king's mistress, Lady Castlemaine, mentioning an encounter. "My wife and I by the water to Westminster, and after she had seen her father, of whom lately I have heard nothing at all what he does, or her mother, she comes to my lord's lodgings, where she and I stayed walking in Whitehall Garden, and in the Privy Garden saw the finest smocks and linen petticoats of Lady Castlemaine, laced with rich lace at the bottom, that ever I saw her did me good to look at them." What I love about the diary is the honesty and the humour. There he said exactly what he was thinking. If I'd been taught about this part of the diaries when I was at school, I probably would have picked the book up a lot more. It is hilarious in some parts. Castlemaine established herself as a powerful force in court, and following the bedchamber incident where Charles made his mistress a lady of the bedchamber. And it was hugely embarrassing for the Queen, to those in the know, that her husband's mistress was only a few steps away at any given moment. It was also hugely disrespectful, not because she was queen, but because she was a human being. Pepys didn't hold back in the diary. For example, he speaks about the king's mistress when she separates from her husband, saying, "This day I was told that Lady Castlemaine, being quite fallen out with her husband, did yesterday go away from him with all her plate, jewels, and other best things, and is gone to Richmond to a brother of hers, which I am apt to think was a design to get out of town, that the king might come at her better. But strange it is how her beauty, I am willing to construe all this to the best, and to pity her, wherein it is to her hurt, though I know well enough she is a whore." Pepys married his wife, Elizabeth de St. Michel, in 1655, when she was 14 years old, as was customary back then. It didn't seem that he and his wife were close. He never mentioned her birthday in almost 10 years of the diary, and occasionally makes reference to unhappiness, saying in December 1662, "My wife, the poor wretch, is troubled with her lonely life." The pair never had children, potentially as an unwanted side effect that Pepys encountered after having surgery in the 1650s to remove kidney stones, though this has never been proved. In 1665, the Great Plague of London struck. Pepys had a very successful year, massively increasing his wealth and working hard at the naval office, mainly as he was of the class that was not affected by the plague. He didn't live in squalor or mix with the poor, travelling most of the time by coach. He did, however, send his wife away from London in the summer. "But Lord, how sad a sight it is to see the streets so empty, and very few upon the change. Jealous of every door that one sees shut up, lest it should be the plague, and about us two shops in three, if not more, generally shut up." Some of the diaries are heartfelt, as he worries about the safety of his friends and family, and shows sadness when people he knew were victims of the plague. For Pepys himself, he actually regarded 1665 as one of his best years, summing up on the 31st of December, saying, "I never lived so merrily, besides that I never got so much, as I have done this plague time." One of the events covered that most people have heard of Samuel Pepys for was the Great Fire of London in 1666. On the second day of the fire, he wrote, "Some of our maids sitting up late last night to get things ready against our feast today, Jane called us up 3 in the morning to tell us of a great fire they saw in the city. So I rose, slipped on my nightgown, and went to her window, and thought it to be on the backside of Mark Lane at the farthest, but being unused to such fires as followed, I thought it far enough, and so went back to bed and slept. About Seven rose again to dress myself, and there looked out at the window, and saw the fire not so much as it was, and further off. So to my closet to set things to rights after yesterday's cleaning. By and by, Jane comes and tells me that she hears that above 300 houses have been burnt down tonight by the fire we saw, and that it is now burning all Fish Street by London Bridge. So I made myself ready presently, and walked to the tower, and there got up upon one of the high places, Sir J. Robinson's little son going up with me, and there I did see the houses and the end of the bridge all on fire. And an infinite great fire on this and the other side of the end of the bridge, which, among other people, did trouble me for poor little Michelle and our Sarah on the bridge. So down with my heart full of trouble to the lieutenant of the tower, who tells me that it begun this morning in the King's Baker's House in Pudding Lane, and that it hath burned St. Magnus's Church and most part of Fish Street already. So I down to the waterside, and there got a boat, and through the bridge, and there saw a lamentable fire. Poor Michelle's house, as far as the old Swan, already burned away, and the fire running further, that in a very little time it got as far as the steelyard, where I was there, everybody endeavouring to remove their goods and flinging into the river, or bringing them into lighters that lay off. Poor people, staying in their houses as long as till the very fire touched them, and then running into boats, or clambering from one pair of stairs by the waterside to another. And among other things, the poor pigeons, I perceive, were loth to leave their houses, but hovered above the windows and the balconies, till they were, some of them, burned their wings, and fell down. When the fire reached his house, terrified, he buried papers, his diaries, and gold in a hole in the garden to stop them from burning. Interestingly, he also buried a large wheel of Parmesan cheese in the hole, which at the time before Amazon was still rare and expensive in London. In 1667, with the Anglo-Dutch War lost, Pepys was heavily involved in giving the order for the Navy to return home. He sent his wife and some gold away, as he had for the plague and the fire of the previous years, from London, as it looked possible that the Dutch would sail up the Thames with little resistance to the capital. They didn't, but broke through one of the most important naval barricades at Medway, and stole the warship known as the Royal Charles, an 80-gun, first-rate, three-decker ship of the line, which, if you're looking for perspective, was the length of around 25.5 Anne Widdecombes, and had a central beam from the deck to the top of the rigging of almost 9 Anne Widdecombes. It was only by reading the diary did I find out how easy it was for the Dutch to take the ship, as Pepys writes on Saturday, the 22nd of June. In the evening, Captain Hart and Heywood to me about the 6 merchant ships now taken up for men of war, and in talk they told me about the taking of the Royal Charles, that nothing but carelessness lost the ship, for they might have saved her the very tide that the Dutch came up, if they would have had but used means and had had but boats, and that the want of boats plainly lost all the other ships. That the Dutch did take her with a boat of 9 men, who found not a man on board her, and her laying so near them was a main temptation for them to come on. They, being gone, by and by comes Sir W. Penn home, and he and I together talking. The King did tell him himself, which is so I was told here in the city, that the city hath lent £10,000 to be laid out towards securing the River of Thames, which, methinks, is a very poor thing, that we should be induced to borrow by such means. Pepys was eccentric, and his diaries are a genuinely fab read. One of his birthdays in 1669, he took his family to the tombs in Westminster, and kissed the dead embalmed queen of Henry V, Catherine de Valois, who had died in 1437. This was seen as a sign of respect in the 17th century, but by today's standards, it's totally revolting. I've already told Mrs. Number 10 that I'll be passing on the tomb visit for my birthday outing, and she can take me to laser tag as planned. On the 31st of May 1669, Pepys recorded his last diary entry. He wrote, "And thus ends all that I doubt I shall ever be able to do with my own eyes in the keeping of my journal, I being not able to do it any longer, having done now so long as to undo my eyes almost every time that I take a pen in my hand, and therefore, whatever comes of it, I must forbear, and therefore resolve from this time forward to have it kept by my people in long hand, and must therefore be contented to set down no more than is fit for them and all the world to know. Or, if there may be anything which cannot be much, now my amours to Deb are past, and my eyes are hindering me in almost all other pleasures. I must endeavour to keep a margin in my book open, to add here and there a note in shorthand with my own hand. And so I betake myself to that course, which is almost as much as to see myself go into the grave, for which, and all the discomforts that will accompany for being blind, the good God prepare me. Shortly after ending the diary, Samuel and Elizabeth Pepys travelled to France. Upon the return from their trip in October, Elizabeth Pepys died. When assessing years, I'd probably say that this would have been one of the poorer reviewed years. Talking of reviews, let's take a break and talk about how you can help the show. I produce this show on my own as a hobby and really enjoy it. I don't have a Patreon or PayPal you can send money to, mainly as that's not why I do this. I do this for fun and to hear all the interesting things you guys email me and chat about on social media. To that extent, I'm looking for two things from you. Share this podcast with your friends and family. And secondly, if you haven't already, send us a review on iTunes. I mentioned a little bit about this at the beginning of the episode. So if you don't remember, start again. It takes 2 seconds and it really helps the rankings. In fact, if you have left a review, wait till one of your friends goes to the toilet whilst you're having a coffee with them and leave a review on their phone too. Back to it. The diary, which is usually published today in 9 or 10 volumes, was written in a number of different languages, and sometimes shorthand. And on the whole, I don't think it was Pepys's intention for it to be published and shared after his death. Then again, as a bibliophile, maybe he longed for his place alongside the great commentators of history. We spoke recently about the Popish plot, and this did too affect Pepys. You know how I said it wasn't good to have any outstanding vendettas at the time? Unfortunately, Pepys had one with a man called Colonel John Scott. He was arrested in 1679 and accused of 2 things. Firstly, that he committed piracy as a senior member of the Naval Board, which he admitted in his diary was a perk of the job, but no evidence could be found to substantiate it. By piracy, I mean stealing from the Crown. More seriously, he was charged with popery and treason, where Scott accused him of having sold naval secrets to the French. Pepys, quite ingeniously, found out that it was Scott who accused him, and had him investigated across 3 different countries, mainly as Scott was in exile having been accused of murdering Edmund Godfrey, the mutilated magistrate that lit the fuse on the Popish plot in 1678. Pepys found evidence that Scott was a huge fraud, and Pepys had ordered his arrest a year before for planning to sell secrets to the French. Mounting a superb defence, Pepys went free and retired at the age of 57 from public life, moving to Clapham, which at the time was still fields and country houses. He died in 1703 and was buried in St. Olave's Church on Hart Street in London, next to his wife. When sorting through his items, they found over 3,000 volumes of written works, not only including his diary, but some incredible historical writings, including Sir Francis Drake's personal almanac, dozens of medieval texts, over 1,000 ballads and pamphlets produced by William Caxton, who brought the printing press to England. All of these were catalogued in immense detail and is one of the best private libraries of the time. It now lives in the Pepys building of Magdalen College, where the diarist studied his Bachelor of Arts degree in 1654. It must have been funny to have studied during a republic only a few years later after the king had been executed, to where it was now, with a stable parliament, with political parties, the first queen of his lifetime, who was kept in check, on the most part, by her MPs and advisers. He guided the navy through the wars with the Dutch, and now there was a Dutchman on the throne. It's why I like looking at the individuals. You really get perspective on how much the world changed around Pepys throughout his lifetime. Pepys had had a busy life, not only with the work in the Naval Board, but also as a Justice of the Peace, a Tory Member of Parliament for Castle Rising, and a younger brethren of the Trinity House Corporation, which essentially dealt with advances in maritime affairs and safety, including lighthouses. The diarist was also awarded the Freedom of the City in both Portsmouth and London. E. Perlman wrote in their book, The Restoration: Studies in English Literary Culture, the following about Pepys, which I think sums him up fantastically. The traditional view of an exuberant, carefree Samuel Pepys, emblem of a purer, merrier time before sexual pleasure was contaminated by Victorian inhibition, cannot survive an enlightened reading of the expurgated text of the diary. Pepys, we used to be told, was a normal, reasonably healthy male animal with an innate love of beauty and pleasure, who truly loved a pretty wench. A recent biographer has modified the old image by noting that toward women, Pepys was cautious and calculating, unheroic, and void of love and tenderness. To me, Pepys was a workaholic who enjoyed life and had an old-fashioned view of women and what should be expected from them, a standard and behaviour that wouldn't stand today's post-Me Too scrutiny. A massive thank you to the Diary of Samuel Pepys website, as well as Project Gutenberg, who have been invaluable in the building of this episode. If you would like to read every Pepys diary entry, as well as in-depth articles and letters by the diarist, head to www.peepsdiary.com. I'll leave the link in the description. I also want to shout out to the Royal Museums of Greenwich, who have got a fab naval history exhibition on at the moment that I visited with Mrs. Number 10 a few weeks back, and was very interested to see the detail of Pepys' involvement in naval reform that set England and soon the United Kingdom up for worldwide naval dominance in the period of history known as Pax Britannica. I'll post the link in the description if you're interested. The exhibit is called Tudor and Stuart Seafarers. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and Greenwich as a whole, you can really feel the history of the 17th and 18th century with the buildings and alleys in the town. Don't attempt to park though, I had a mini breakdown in a Wild Bean cafe whilst looking for a parking space. Thank you for listening to the Number 10 podcast. Till next time, goodbye.